Okay, this is the principals before personalities meet or workshop, and our speaker's gonna be Josh F. How are you? I think that you have.
Okay.
Don't they have till 2?
3 hours.
Yeah.
I think you got till 2.
I'm Josh, and I'm grateful for covering that.
Hi, Josh.
Getting my stuff spread out here. You know, it is pretty funny that I ended up with this topic, if you know me. I'm going to make sure that I touch on some literature here so that nobody can say that we didn't talk about literature while I was in here. And this book right here is awesome, and oftentimes it doesn't get talked about or discussed, but I want to read some things out of it, because in most of the areas it talks about members and groups and service, and it breaks it down into 3 different sections for all of this stuff. So I want to read what it talks about in the 12th tradition as it relates to members real quick. It says, placing principles before personalities protects us from our own defects of character. While it may take time for us to work through and trust the process, as we grow in our recovery, we learn that we don't have to make our personalities smaller. It's through our differences and difficulties with each other that we learn how to practice principles. When we hear a message from a member we have conflict with, or see recovery working in the life of someone we had no hope for, we start to understand that open-mindedness doesn't just help us tolerate others. It broadens our ability to hope. When we see the limits of our vision are not the limits of possibility, our faith blossoms. Learning to hear each other in meetings and in service takes practice. We test each other's limits all the time, and each of us has particular challenges with members or behaviors we cannot seem to tolerate. We don't have to like everyone in NA. But if we turn our attention to our reaction rather than the person or thing we're reacting to, we may find relief much sooner. And that's what it talks about for members. So I'm going to touch on my experience, my clean date's March 3rd, 2015. I did not go to treatment when I got clean this time. I've been to 5 treatment centers, but that was not my experience. And the reason that I want to touch on that is because when I came back, I've lived in Murfreesboro, Tennessee for a decade. And like I said, this coming March 3rd, I'll have 9 years if all goes well. And so obviously I haven't been clean the whole time. The purpose of me moving to Murfreesboro, Tennessee was to be clean and get out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. So there's a year difference and includes a relapse in that period. And so there was this guy at a group called Rutherford County Night Owls. And he was from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I despised his stupid fedora. I could not stand his shoes that didn't match his stupid suit that he wore over and over. I could not stand his accent. There was a part of me, based on my upbringing, that had a little bit of issue with his color, if we want to be honest. He would always say, if you want to see about recovery, see how I live. And I remember sitting in the meetings. And when I would sit in the meetings, I would have my seat, and instead of concentrating on the message that was in the room, I would be timing myself in my own head for how quickly I could get out of my seat and slap his face and sit back down. So I'm like, I can probably get this in under 2.5 seconds, you know. Especially with these shoes on, I can get this with 2.5 seconds, you know. And there's messages of recovery being shared, but my brain is focused on the how much I despise this individual, you know. And he kept talking about Philadelphia, And in my brain, I'm like, why don't you call the damn Philadelphia Fire Department if your fucking house burns on fire? We're in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Why do you keep talking about Philadelphia? Right? And that's what my brain is doing, right? So I relapsed. And it was true what they said. They said that y'all's faces would come into my head when I got high. And it was miserable because I kept seeing the little old ladies that would always be like, Josh, keep coming back. You know, there's nothing worse, I promise, than hitting a crack pipe and seeing a member of NA go. Nothing. There's nothing worse. There's nothing worse. But I have experienced that, you know. And so when it was time for me to get clean, I had burnt all these indigent treatment, no insurance bridges. In my brain, I'd burnt all those bridges. And I'm like, you know what? We're going to give this outfit one last shot. And I'm going to prove that NA is a hock of shit. And I'm going to hit this guy up talking about see how I live, right? And I called him. And I said, man, you know, thank goodness I haven't gone as far down as I did previously. I'm 43. I got introduced to this when I was 27. And thank goodness I didn't go that far down. And I told him, I said, you know, I can't work. I'm not able to go to work and function. So I need you to talk about this NA lifestyle that you live. And what he said, come on over, young fella. And I'm like, damn it. And I went over there, and you know, I'm on his couch. I don't have the capability of holding books and all this when I'm in full-blown withdrawal. However, he pulled up his seat and he would read the literature to me. He did cook for me. And so this 67-year-old African-American homosexual man with HIV is the way that I got clean.
Wow.
Right. And at that time, that's when God said, guess what, buddy? You don't get to pick your hell. And that was a hard lesson to learn. And the reason I say it's funny that I end up having this topic is because even with that, I've had some speed bumps along the way with personalities and individuals. And there will be times, and I know I'm not the only one in here, there will be times in the recovery process that I know in my brain that there is a style that this individual has that can help an addict that I cannot help, but I refuse to acknowledge it.
Mm.
Because it's my way.
Mm.
We do it my way, right? That's my how I got here story and how this is applicable for me. This next area is in regards to the groups. I'm a member of the Never Alone group in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and have been for a minute, I guess 4 or 5 years now. And then we just helped start a different group. And the blessing about our community is when I got there 10 years ago, there was 2 meetings. One of them met 6 nights a week, and one of them met on the Monday night that meeting did not meet. And that's pretty much what you had. And when you went into a meeting and there was 16 people in the room, you're like, oh my God, it's busy tonight, right? Now we have noon meetings, we have 5:30, we have 6 o'clock, we have 6:45, we have 7. You know, and we have multiple meetings every single night of the week. And you walk into a meeting in Murfreesboro and there's 40 people in there. They're like, yeah, kind of slow tonight, you know. And so what that is for me is a testament that our community, despite our differences, has been able to practice these traditions and make this piece attractive, because there would be no way for us to grow at that rate without something being attractive about what's going on, right? And so I'm really blessed to be recovering where I recover. I want to say that. So on the groups, it says, anonymity is important at the group level for another reason. Our groups have their own identities. Our fourth tradition provides groups with the autonomy to conduct their meetings as they see fit, as long as they adhere to the guidance and the rest of the traditions. The fifth tradition sets the job of carrying our message ahead of anything else a group does. The personality the group develops and its autonomy should always be in service to the task of carrying the message as best we can. This is one way in which groups place our principles first. Another way can be found in the selection of trusted servants. The members who make up a home group typically lend their personalities to the identity of the group. Practicing the spirit of rotation when choosing our group trusted servants can go a long way in helping the group to develop an identity based on practices and principles rather than particular personalities. There's a reason I read that too. So how many of us have been in situations where you're like, why does this dude want to be GSR for 22 fucking years in a row? And the second question is, who would allow it? Right? For me, I have to take several things into account. I have to look at how long this specific community has been blessed with Narcotics Anonymous being in it. And then I've got to look at the fact that, you know, we have a concepts piece too that I'm not going to dive off into, but it does speak about when peaking trusted servants, like, I'll do this, I'll get honest. I'm going to go on a little segue here. How many people are willing to raise their hand in this room and say that they have misappropriated NA funds? Look at that. I love y'all. All four of us, right? Here's the piece. I don't care if you're a pastor or a pregnant mother or whatever. If I'm getting high, I'm taking your money. That's how I operate when I get high. You know, some people have a great moral compass. Congratulations. That's not me. If you have it, I want it. I'm getting high today. I hope you're not in my way. That's how we go. And so, when I took $347 of my home group's money after I relapsed, and everybody was always wanting to wonder why Josh wants to chair the meeting so damn much, you know, thank God when I came back, they didn't say, where's our money? They said, we're so glad you're back. And that welcoming atmosphere had me paying that money back within 2 weeks of being clean again in Narcotics Anonymous. And the piece that we just read, so I like to call them experienced members. People use predecessors, people use different words. I call them experienced members because I think there was a blend of terms and fellowships that we need to check out. Again, another soapbox I'm not going to get on. But our experienced members that have been here, the folks who were here setting up the rooms and doing all the stuff when I got here, they taught me to take pride in that stuff. When my first assignment was making sure, like right now, this front row gives me total OCD. Like, I'm just like, how can they exist in this meeting right now when the chairs are not totally straight, right? Because when I got clean, the gentleman, Mr. Tony O from Rutherford County, he's got 22 years now, I believe, he would set these things up pristine, like a half an inch apart. And I'm like, well, that's how we're going to do it. And we're going to make sure everything's square, and we're going to make sure everything's perfect. But guess what? At 2 weeks clean, that's all I knew that I could do that I could have any kind of pride in. So that's what I did. But these there's folks that can be done without it necessarily being a position, right? Sometimes you just show up and you help. Some groups have it where it's the chairperson's responsibility. Some groups have it where the GSR takes care of everything. Some groups have it where the treasurer takes care of everything. It sits right here because I know I'm not the only person in this room that at some point or the other was like, no, you don't go over there to that group. You know what they do with that group? Like, if you listen to an addict scorned that has a resentment, you will think there is Satan worship going on across town. You know, and here's my experience. I had to experience and experienced members saying, don't go there, they do this, don't talk to him, he does this. And what they're doing is they're holding human beings hostage to behaviors that they may or may not have gotten rid of. If I truly believe this process works, then why in the hell am I going to hold somebody hostage on an affair they had 16 fucking years ago and then tell other people not to talk to them as a result of it?
Right on.
Where do they do that at? Right? And so I am one of... I had to experience people saying, don't do that, don't talk to him, don't talk to him, don't go over there. I had to experience that myself. And then I had to figure out, as I started working my way out of that tiny little bubble that I had put myself in, that I had to get my own experience with individuals and with groups. Because sometimes groups develop due to growth, and a lot of times groups spring off due to resentments. And so if something has sprung off due to a resentment, and I talk to the person that has that resentment, I'm going to think there's all sorts of horrible things going on over there. So my message on this piece is to make sure that we get our own experience with the groups and not listen to shit. And that's the only word I can use for it, right? I know it's not politically correct to say, but literally, if I'm telling you where and how to get your help and it doesn't come out of this book, then I'm telling you shit. Last piece. Now this is in the service piece of this. And it says, personalities themselves don't conflict with principles, but sometimes our actions do. We may have to check ourselves. Is this person actually out of line, or are we just frustrated by who they are? Is this member really the best one for the role? Or are we voting for them because they're our friend? Or because we want them to like us? Are we responding to their actions or their personality? Are we asking some members to adhere more closely to guidelines than others? If an action is wrong, it's wrong no matter who is doing it. If an action is right, it deserves our support no matter who is doing it. Walking that walk is what it means to have integrity, right? And so, man, I've done a lot of service work along the way and in certain arenas, I can still find myself in that exact position that I was in before I came back to Narcotics Anonymous. In 2.5 seconds, I can get up and slap his face, and I would like for him to shut up talking now, right? Even today, I can get there sometimes. Because as you stay along here, and here's the thing, that person that I'm thinking about, if they called me as a recovering addict and they said, hey man, I'm really struggling and I think I might use, I will be there. I will be there. But still, at the same time, I am human. So there are things and personality conflicts that I'm going to experience along this journey that are impossible to disregard. So it states in this literature that it's okay for me to call myself a grateful recovering addict and still not like somebody. But come through that door, I might not still like you. But it's my job to love you and help you if this disease is on your ass. If they didn't do it for me, I promise you I wouldn't be here. Right? And ask around if you ever want to about how I acted when I got clean. I was abrasive. I was filled with hate and anger. I was the guy that would, like the drunk dude at the bar that would shoulder check people and just look at them. I'm like, what? That's basically how I was clean. Because I was so annoyed with the life that I put myself into. You know, I was grateful, but I was still angry and annoyed. And I'm telling you right now, it's okay to be both. If I didn't get clean, I wouldn't have emotions, right? So now it's like, we've read some things, and I'm just going to go, obviously, when I say this topic picked me, I'm not going to lie, I had an option. But I knew this would be the hardest one for me to do, so this is the one that I picked. So when I talked to my sponsor and said I had been asked to go talk about principles before personalities, the first thing he did was laugh. And then later on in the day, like 3 hours later during the day, he sent me this little passage, right? And so I read that, and he gave me a point that all of these topics are not only in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. The whole point of us being here is so that we can live productive and do good out there, right? And so I'm just going to go through a few relationship dynamics that I have in my life, right? And how I try to put a principle before these certain types of personalities. So my grandparents, one set is dead, one set is still alive. Both of my grandfathers were head deacons for Baptist churches. So when our literature talks about misinformed by the misinformed, they were very knowledgeable about what the Bible said. As far as putting it in real life application for how we treat others, that's where there was a little bit of a send-off. And I can explain it like this. Like my they were great people, but for someone like me that feels deeply, sees with discernment, and from a young age has been able to sense certain tensions and things going on around me, that let's sweep it under the rug and you're not supposed to talk about your feelings shit didn't work real well. And the answer, go pray about it. You want me to go pray about the fact that I'm literally the poorest child in this school? And that when my vehicle pulls up, I get laughed at before I even get out of the fucking car? What do you want me to pray about?
God damn.
What do you want me to pray about? Right? And so, and again, these are great people. They really are, especially in regards to the community. But some of the ways that they pass down things, so my Aunt Tracy, and this is for humor and reality. She has a chili bowl and she coaches softball. And she has a partner named Deb. Now, the way they crammed it down our throat was that homosexuality was wrong. But when Tracy and Deb show up and stay over at the house and spend the night places, and as a child you question, well, now you said this, we're not sure they're gay. So from youth, I got taught about hypocrisy and applying spiritual principles when you wanted to, when they benefited you the most. Okay? My dad.
Love you, man.
So, he worked about 20 hours a day. When I was growing up, he would get home at midnight and leave at 4. So as far as becoming a man or learning how to do male things, I learned them myself. I shaved my face for the first time with no instruction. Looked like a cat's ass. And those certain things that there would be guidance in, I did not receive those. And there's no way to say this without it being true. I was a very good athlete. I was one of those athletes that was poor, whose other families would pay for me to travel with them and play on these teams. I was that guy. And so what I saw was extreme jealousy on what a family should look like versus my family. When my mother slept upstairs, my dad slept downstairs, I've never seen them hug or kiss, and they said that the reason that they did not get divorced is because biblically there was no justification because there was not adultery or abuse involved. So my point in saying this in regards to him was that I never ever saw him, but I can remember several instances. I can remember the temperature, I can remember people's outfits, and I can remember looking up in the stands and being like, I wonder if he's here tonight. Never has he seen me perform in any athletic event, ever, right? Now, what principle am I going to put with that? Because again, my dad's a good guy. He just didn't show anything towards children because he thought his job was to provide. So I have to practice some acceptance there. Have to practice that that time is gone. Now, I'm still a jackass, and I still play competitive sports at the age of 43 until I break myself, but I'm not expecting him to show up now. So that time is gone. But what I can do, since he's about to have a surgery, because he hasn't been able to eat solid foods in 2 years, and he went from 225 to where he's about 145 because his esophagus is going shut, mm-hmm. and he's having to have a really odd chest-cracking procedure to do really, really weird surgery, I can show up. I'm not holding against him the resentment that I felt. So I have to practice acceptance in that relationship and forgiveness, right? A mom. She is a Baptist piano player and teacher that has been doing that ever since we've been alive. My mother is also an extreme martyr. When I get into the presence of my mother, my defenses go up. Because every time my father walked in the door when I was little, the arrows started. So I got taught from a young age, when you argue, you go for the damn jugular right off the bat. We don't go PG, PG-13, and then R. We go for the jugular, and we're going to make sure everybody knows we're displeased, and we're going to talk about the thing that we know is going to trigger you the most, and that's what we're going to do. So when I go in the arena of my mother, as nice and awesome as she is, and she has been there for me, she was there for me in active addiction. I was in active addiction for 17 years, and she was there for me, but it does not change the fact that when I get in her presence, my defenses automatically go up still to this day, right? I have to practice patience and tolerance with her. She's got something wrong with her knee. She wears a brace on her ankle. I saw like five heads do like that. Welcome to my world. It makes no sense why you're going to wear an ankle brace for a knee problem. But that's part of being a martyr. I'll get more attention. I'd rather have bad attention than no attention at all. Right? What about my siblings? Literally sent fear from heaven to bless us all. And then there was Josh over here on Asshole Island. Right? They've all got college degrees. They've all got the picket fence. They've got land at the foot of the mountain. They've custom built their houses. My brother even made sure that my parents can move in next to his house so that they have the house next door to them so they can take care of him. Swear to God, he fosters one of those dogs that looks like Target that's deaf. That's the kind of siblings I have. Right? I was trying to think about what principle is actually practiced when I deal with them, because they are awesome humans. I love being in their presence. We cut jokes. We talk about the good old days and how extremely violent me and my brother were towards each other, all that fun stuff. But I have to do humility, because my disease will have me comparing me in 17 years of active addiction as though I should have the same markers that they had, going to school, never using, starting a family, and being productive members of society. But I will be over here waking up in the morning thinking, oh, the piece of shit woke up again. Look at all them. The piece of shit woke up again. Right? If I allow it to. So I have to practice humility with them. and acceptance of my own behaviors.
Yes.
Right? Because I'm putting my personality or my principle before personalities too. What principle I'm doing here, right? My children. If you were to scroll through Facebook, it would appear as though I have a better relationship with my children than I do. Because during the few times a year that I get to be around them, I do take pictures and I do post it. Not so that people will think anything. They are taken care of 98% of the time by individuals other than me. And, you know, when I got clean, they told me about consequences and how we don't get to determine the length of them, right? And so I could try to move to Atlanta and compete with a family living in a country club, or I could try to move back to Chattanooga and do something different. But I told myself when I got here this time that I was not going to put a time limit on how long I stayed in this area like I did every other damn time and be like, I'll be there for 90 days. And I said, no. And so God has me here with a full life that I have developed in Murfreesboro, and that is my home. And so it's very difficult. All I can do is prepare that if something were to happen to either sets of these parents, that I am prepared to take it over. And that's what I do. I see them when I can. But I have to practice surrender with that. Because my decisions got me there. Right? My girlfriend. I was talking to somebody on the way down here. She just had oral surgery. I think that's a good thing. He said, how's your trip going? And I said, we've done everything from say I love you to yell. So it's been great, you know? This individual I was with for several years and then went to test the waters for 4.5, 5 more years, right? And I knew back then that I was supposed to be with them. But when you're damn 8.5, 9 years clean and reunited with a new member, Patience, tolerance. I've had to throw in a lump of forgiveness for things that happened in the past because I am one that I got taught to keep a Rolodex in my head with dates on it so that I can just flip to the file and say, you don't fucking remember that? And empathy. I don't want to be there again. But I also haven't forgotten what it's like to be there. But sometimes I do. Starting over is not a fun thing to do. So I have to practice all those things in that relationship with my friends. Open-mindedness, willingness, and vulnerability. The people that I'm friends with today are not the people that I'm friends with when I got here. Because my disease, when I got here, was focused on chaos, drama, and all the extra crap that goes along with it. So that was what was attractive to me. My friends now, they have businesses, they have careers, they do things, they have ambition in this process, they help others, they show service to others. That's the type of individuals that I want to be around today, right? And because I'm around those people, if you ask my friend group, they will say that probably my weakest thing is vulnerability. Because I've been here just long enough to where I get to be really good friends with somebody and then they go out and die. Over and over. Or they go out to me, which is even worse, and I see somebody that I know is just like me with a head full of Narcotics Anonymous that's sitting there living in active addiction, absolutely miserable every single second of every day that they exist. And I have to watch it from afar because I'm not Dog the Recovery Hunter. I'm not coming after your ass. I'm not doing it. I take it very heavy when they told me when I got here that they will get me high before I get them clean.
Yeah.
Right? Not doing it. The NA Fellowship. Woo! Open-mindedness, we've discussed that one. Compassion. My compassion is a little harder edged than probably a lot of people. You know, and that's what makes this fellowship so great is I've got more of an old school mindset because of when I first got introduced to this process, and that's what worked for me. There's people that do the sun and crystals and love and light and all that stuff, and that is totally fine. We need all aspects of every person in here for that. But in regards to the NA Fellowship itself, I have to be really, really diligent about being open-minded to hear others' perspectives, because I will get locked and loaded on, well, you don't have this experience or this experience or this experience, so how can you know? You know, and be unwilling to listen. And so I have to practice that. I think that service is a spiritual principle for me. What I was taught, one good thing I was taught from my grandfather is that the best leaders serve the best, right? And so I use that in my own business and in my employment since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous, and that served me well. So I use it outside the rooms, inside the rooms. You know, like I said, I've done a litany of different service positions since I've been here, and I do believe if you're new in this process, when we say the word business meeting, it sounds boring as shit. If you show up to the business meeting, you're going to find out what people are really about. So if you still got a little bit of that likes a little bit of chaos, a little drama, a little arguing, show up to the business meeting. It's not as boring as it may sound, right? And that's also, that's the funny part, but the real part is, if I'm sitting in this room right now and I feel like I don't fit in, like, how we don't fit in with a bunch of drug addicts, I'm not sure when we're all drug addicts, but if you feel like you don't fit in, there is a place. I don't even have to ask, no matter what area you're from, what home group you're from, if you show up with willingness and say, I'm here to serve, what can I do? If the group that you're a part of is practicing these traditions at all, you'll have a spot when you walk out the door to fit in, right? I've got three more things I'm going to cover. So, residents. If you would have told me when I got clean that I would basically quit my 9-to-5 work for the man jobs and have recovery houses for individuals in this process, I would have laughed at you and thought that that was above my scope and not in my realm. But I have 6 of them. And so I've got 58 people that depend on me for certain things on a regular basis. I have to use empathy. I see it every day. See people come with nothing. I have to run my business almost like a nonprofit, even though it's not, because the principles of this program won't allow me and my spirit to gouge. And it won't allow me to say, oh, you don't have a job in 2 weeks, hit the fucking road. That's not something that I'm comfortable doing, unless there's a total lack of willingness involved. So I have to practice empathy, have to compassion, integrity. I deal with people's funds all day long, every day. It would be really, really easy for me to say, this is what the deal is, this is what you owe, and me to get a little extra here and there. But I found that every time in my past life that I did anything in that regard, it not only failed, but it was also exposed, right? Discernment, and I want to touch on this real quick too. There's no... In our literature, it speaks to the fact that several times there's no desire gauge. There's no perfect person in here that can gauge everybody else's desire to be clean, right? And I've struggled with that because I'll say, your actions do this and your mouth does that, right? And so it's only natural that I'm going to use human nature and say this person's full of shit, right? But I've got to look at willingness in the process whenever I'm doing that. So that's where the discernment comes in, is for me to have and pray about enough wisdom to be like, what's really going on here? The rest of humanity, I've gotten to the point I cannot say what's in my head to the rest of humanity. I can't. Because I look around where I'm at different places and I'm like, is this really the fucking world we live in now? Are you really going to take the shopping cart and sling it into that Suburban because your fucking lazy ass won't walk it back? And are really going to constantly get electronic media to request money from me for a person that I don't even know? Like what's really going on out there? So for humanity, I struggle. I'm a kind person. If I'm at a store and you drop something, I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to help you and all that. But it's kind of like, for me, I'm just kind of like, dude, like what is really going on in the world right now? You know, it seems like humanity as a whole is at a decline. But all I can try to do is be a light in that situation, you know. The last one is that I've got written down here is the newcomer. I got taught early on, and we hear it all the time, that the newcomer is the most important person at the meeting. We hear that. I think that most of us adhere to that. But what about that newcomer that we give the suggestion, I suggest you don't share for 30 days, and they share every fucking meeting for 30 days. Why are we laughing? Because we know that guy, or we know that lady. What about the one that comes in with raggedy clothes and no food, and we feed them and we clothe them? And then they relapse over and over, and they find a new target every time they come back, and they've got 33 pairs of Jordans from 33 different people in Narcotics Anonymous, and they are looking great on the outside, but they continuously relapse. What do? We shun them? Because we just talked about the fact that there's no measure on desire. What if the 34th time is the time they got it, and they got to come, and they got to come to conventions, and they got to tell everybody how it took them 33 times, but this one dude, the 34th time, was kind enough to say, come on back, without judgment, right? The folks that introduced themselves as a grateful believer in Jesus Christ that's cross-addicted to kratom and alcohol, member of the modern day saints, grateful to be here. What about those people? Got 73 word introductions. When our last name's supposed to be addict. Well, I got two options. I can either listen to it every meeting, or I can, with kindness and empathy and compassion, talk to them not in a public setting and say, I'm going to give a suggestion that you don't have to take. But around here, this is what we do. You know, this might prevent some embarrassment in the future for you if you take it, right? And so, this topic was fitting for me and where I'm at in life, because I oftentimes get really mad that things don't go my way. And I don't mean that I pout. I mean that I'm like, based on the nature of my business and the individuals that I deal with on a regular basis, I'm like, don't you see? And I have to put myself in my own shoes. It took me 9 years to get 1 year clean. I would get 3 or 6 months, and every damn time I had a car, I had a job, and I had a girl. And there was no reason for Narcotics Anonymous to be in my life anymore. because Josh has arrived again.
Come on, Josh.
Again. And the car and the girl are even better than the last time.
Oh, man.
And then, when the experienced member comes up to me during my courting process and says, "Hey, Josh, we suggest that you don't do this. Do you remember this time and this time?" What's my defense? "They're so jealous." I'm going to close with this. My first sponsor, I had 8 months clean. I was living in a recovery home, and I said, "It's about time for me to get a car." He said, "Okay, how much money do you have saved up?" I said, "You don't need money at Easy Auto Credit, dumbass." Go in there with $300 or $400 down, and they'll get you riding. The fucking commercials say it. I'm gonna be riding. He says, "I don't suggest that you do that." I took another guy from the halfway house that didn't have a car, that was literally just like that TLC song, Scrubs. This was getting played out in real life. And I see this royal blue 2002 Ford Focus that even had a sport wing on it. So for a mere $468 a month, I could sign up for this beautiful manual transmission vehicle. And he's like, "Do it." And I was like, "I'm gonna do it. I earned this. I've been clean fucking 7 months, bro. I deserve this." I told you about my time difference in 10 years. I had that car less than a month. Relapsed with a girl. First time in my life I'd ever in my entire life, even in active addiction, messed with a married individual. They said, "Josh, you don't need a car. Josh, stay away from the women." That resulted in me taking her in my beautiful Ford Focus down to a eating meeting in Shelbyville, Tennessee. When we came out, her husband and her three toddler children were in the back seat of his car, where he proceeded to chase us down the interstate with a shotgun pointed out the window. But at least I got to fuck. That's what we do. Total self-centeredness. Instant gratification. Right now, this is going to happen. What I won't forget about, I don't even care about the husband. What I'll never forget is the fear in those kids' faces in the back seat of that car going down the interstate at 90 miles an hour.
Wow.
I turned that car in after I'd paid $12,000. I would have paid $19,000 for about a $4,000 vehicle. But you know that suggestion from my sponsor? He was jealous. He was jealous of what was about to happen in my life, all the beautiful things that were going to happen as a result of me getting that fucking car, right? So hopefully I've touched on some things that were appropriate with this topic. You know, the one word that I haven't really focused on that all this entire thing is about is the word love, right? When men, my friends, these two cats right here are two very good friends of mine, right? When they say, "Love you, Josh, love you, bud," still to this day at almost 9 years clean, the inside of my bones go, "Ooh." And it's not because of them. It's because I have a very hard time receiving love because I never saw it put into action in my younger days unless there was a dangled carrot outside of it. right? And so I have to define that word and then practicing it with everyone. At the end of all questions, I can ask myself, is this rooted in love? Is this situation rooted in love or not? Right? And so that is a struggle that I still struggle with, but I understand, because there's been so much of it thrown all over me in the almost 9 years that I've been here, that I cannot deny it, and I can't refuse it. And I accept it begrudgingly, but what's happened over a course of time is that my acceptance of that allows me to give it to others. And that's what this whole thing is about. So hopefully something I shared you identified with. Thanks for letting me share.